So imagine a massive suspension bridge. It's engineered to handle really heavy commuter traffic.
Right. Yeah. Built to take a beating.
Exactly. It's built to sway. It's built to survive, hurricane force winds. But what happens if you have bumper to bumper, overloaded 18-wheelers, a Category 5 hurricane, and like a localized earthquake snapping a primary support cable all at the exact same millisecond?
Well, the bridge doesn't just sway at that point.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah.
The structural integrity actually begins to fail because it's being stress tested from basically every conceivable angle simultaneously. And welcome to the Truth Seeker Weekly Briefing, mainstream media news. On behalf of the Great Awakening Report, we are officially welcoming you to this deep dive.
Glad to be here.
Today, we are looking at the mainstream media featured news for the week of March 20, 2026. And before we even dig into the data today, I really want to look directly at you, the listener, and just acknowledge what you are likely feeling right now.
Yeah, it's important to start there.
It really is. Because if you're carrying a heavy weight right now,
Oh.
if the palpable tension of global war, the crushing challenges of the economy, and just the sheer volume of chaotic news is weighing on you, you are not crazy. It is objectively heavy out there right now.
It's a profound amount of weight for any one person to process. I mean, the natural biological response to that level of sustained tension is to just tune out, to go numb to the information just to survive the day.
Right, to just shut off the news completely.
Exactly. But the mission of this deep dive is to do the exact opposite.
Yeah. We have a source document today that synthesizes 57 independent sources focusing on seven key mainstream news headlines from this week. And we aren't here to just read you the news. You can get that anywhere.
Right. Our goal is to connect the dots.
Yes, and the source material frames our mission perfectly. It says, "In a world clouded by distraction and deception, true power lies in seeing the bigger picture."
And that bigger picture is defined by a concept called systemic compression.
Systemic compression.
Yeah. We are no longer looking at isolated crises. Historically, if you look back, geopolitical conflicts, economic downturns, technological disruptions, they all operated on different timelines.
Right, they moved independently of each other.
Exactly. What makes this specific week in March 2026 so critical is the synchronization. Geopolitical, economic, technological, and social systems are all operating under sustained, multidimensional pressure at the exact same time.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because going back to that suspension bridge analogy, we need to look at the specific forces that are testing the cables. Let's start with the economic weight.
Right, the macroeconomy.
Yeah. The Federal Reserve has cemented this higher for longer posture. So the era of 0% interest rates and easy money is officially dead, and borrowing costs are staying high.
That higher for longer reality is it's essentially the overarching economic weather system. It forces liquidity to tighten across the board, capital becomes incredibly selective, and when money is expensive, the physical economy is forced to contract.
Wait, but and pushback here, real estate is notoriously cyclical.
Right.
We've seen boom and bust property cycles for decades. Why shouldn't we just view this as another standard dip that will eventually bounce back when rates inevitably get cut?
Well, if we connect this to the bigger picture and we look closely at the mechanics of commercial real estate or CRE, we see a dual threat that completely breaks the standard cyclical mold.
Okay, how so?
Let's look at how these buildings are actually financed. A massive percentage of office buildings and retail spaces were bought or refinanced during that low rate era of like 2019 to 2021.
When money was basically free.
Exactly. But they didn't use 30-year fixed mortgages like a home buyer would. They used short-term floating rate debt structures, usually 3 to 5 year terms.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So an investment group that bought a skyscraper at a 3% interest rate is suddenly hitting a massive maturity wall right now.
Meaning their loan is up and they're forced to refinance that exact same building at what, 7 or 8%?
Yeah. And the math simply doesn't work. That cost of servicing that debt has doubled basically overnight.
That's insane.
It is. But that is only the financial side. The second threat is that demand itself has fundamentally changed. Remote and hybrid work models have permanently reduced office utilization.
Right. Nobody's going back to the office 5 days a week.
Exactly. So you have a situation where the underlying business model for these properties, which is collecting rent from packed offices, is weakening at the exact same time their financing conditions are drastically tightening.
So it's not a cycle.
No, it is a structural misalignment. It's a slow-moving balance sheet reset across the entire real economy.
Wow. So the buildings generate less cash, because fewer people are in them, but they cost exponentially more to finance. Yeah. That is a brutal structural squeeze.
It really is.
And this exact same unwinding of physical property models is happening on the other side of the planet, too. Because when you look at the data coming out of China this week, their economic slowdown is a perfect mirror of this structural failure.
Absolutely. For decades, China relied on this highly leveraged property-driven growth model. Real estate development and constant infrastructure projects fueled their local government revenues and employment.
They were just building empty cities, right?
Right. Entire cities were built on the assumption of infinite growth. And now that model is unwinding. Local government financing vehicles are burdened with massive debt overhangs. There is massive oversupply in housing, and domestic buyer confidence has just plummeted.
Plus, you have an educated youth population facing incredibly high unemployment. I mean, you have millions of young workers who did everything right, got their degrees, and simply cannot find stable employment in this contracting system.
And when youth unemployment spikes like that, household spending just freezes. The internal economic momentum stalls. And because export demand from the West is also declining, China's primary growth engine is sputtering out.
To put this in perspective for you listening, the source uses a very specific word for China's slowdown. It calls it transmissive.
Transmissive, yeah.
Meaning, these aren't just isolated numbers on a spreadsheet in Beijing. China has been the manufacturing hub and the primary consumer of raw commodities for the entire world. When their engine slows down, it signals a global demand contraction.
It ripples out.
Exactly. Deflationary pressure ripples through the supply chains you rely on and directly impacts the health of your local economy.
Yeah.
It's a massive contraction of the physical world.
And as that physical economy contracts, companies are desperately looking for ways to survive. They are under immense macroeconomic pressure to maintain profit margins while capital is so expensive.
Right. Which brings us perfectly to the next point. This exact same corporate desperation to cut physical costs is what's pulling the trigger on the digital side.
The technological squeeze.
Yes, the technological squeeze. We are seeing a massive shift in tone from major corporations this week regarding artificial intelligence. They aren't talking about AI as a fun hypothetical anymore.
No, not at all.
They are openly confirming that they are actively replacing white-collar roles with AI right now. Coding, data analysis, customer support, research human labor is literally being decoupled from corporate output.
Because for decades, the assumption was that blue-collar physical labor would be automated first, while white-collar knowledge work was somewhat insulated.
People thought their desk jobs were safe.
Exactly. The belief was that cognitive complexity and specialization protected those office jobs. But AI is dismantling that assumption in real time.
And here's where it gets really interesting, because people still try to compare AI to past technological leaps. They say, you know, oh, it's just a new tool, like when we transitioned from pen and paper to a calculator.
I hear that all the time.
But AI isn't just a new tool. It's an economic force multiplier. It's like inventing a calculator that not only does the complex math for you, but then attends the board meeting to present the math and writes the follow-up emails to the clients afterward.
That is a great way to put it. And that force multiplier effect creates a very aggressive corporate feedback loop. Think about the incentives here. Early adopters implement these AI systems, they drastically reduce their headcount, and their profit margins immediately improve.
Which basically puts a gun to the head of their competitors.
Exactly. If your rival is producing the same output with a fraction of the payroll, you either implement AI immediately or you get priced out of the market entirely.
You literally can't afford not to use it.
Right. And the competitive pressure takes a transition that labor economists thought would take a decade and compresses the timeline into mere quarters. This structural labor dislocation isn't a future threat. The fact that leadership teams are publicly announcing these shifts means the internal restructuring is already well underway.
But, and this is a huge but, when you automate your entire knowledge workforce and connect every operational layer to digital models, you accidentally create a massive new attack surface.
Yeah.
If AI and interconnected networks are running your grid, whoever controls those networks controls your reality. And this links directly to the next headline, which is the massive coordinated increase in cybersecurity alerts across critical infrastructure this week.
We're talking energy grids, municipal water systems, telecommunications, and transportation, all flashing red.
Yeah. And the nature of these alerts is shifting, isn't it?
It is. What's fascinating here is that security agencies are way less focused on isolated data breaches or ransomware and much more focused on systemic exposure. State and non-state actors are actively mapping the critical infrastructure of rival nations.
Okay, wait. I have a question about this. If they are already inside our water systems or power grids, why aren't the taps turning off? Why aren't we seeing blackouts right now? Why just sit there?
Because modern cyber warfare is no longer a smash-and-grab operation. When advanced, persistent threats infiltrate a municipal water facility, they aren't looking to immediately trigger an alarm. They utilize an enter, remain, and wait strategy.
Enter, remain, and wait.
Right. They navigate through the basic business networks to map the SCADA systems. The SCADA systems are the actual physical control software that opens and closes water valves or routes electricity.
So they are quietly sitting in the dark, drawing a blueprint of the building from the inside, and basically unlocking the back door so they can come back later.
Exactly. They are establishing long-term footholds to gain optionality. It completely changes the timeline of conflict from something reactive to something highly premeditated.
It's terrifying when you really think about it.
It creates what's called a gray zone environment. The digital battle space is fully active, heavily contested, and deeply compromised, even if a physical bomb hasn't been dropped. It's all about establishing leverage for when geopolitical tensions finally snap.
And that concept of pre-positioning and leverage maps perfectly onto the physical world right now. Now, before we explore these next two stress points, which are the U.S.-Iran escalation and the U.S. border crisis, I want to be explicitly clear with you listening.
Yes, very important point here.
We are impartially reporting the systemic realities outlined in our source text. We are not taking political sides, and we are not validating any partisan framing from the left or the right. We are simply analyzing the infrastructure, the logistical math, and the geopolitical stress exactly as the data presents it.
Because looking at it purely as a systems analysis strips away all that political noise and reveals the actual mechanical strain. Let's look at the staging in the Middle East, specifically around the Strait of Hormuz.
Right.
We are seeing carrier groups, advanced air defense systems, and forward operating assets locked in a standoff.
Yeah, and the source identifies this as pressure without release. It is carefully modulated escalation. Both sides are flexing military capabilities, but attempting to avoid triggering a broader, uncontrollable regional war.
But the global markets aren't waiting for the first shot to be fired.
Exactly. Shipping insurance premiums for cargo vessels moving through the Strait of Hormuz are absolutely skyrocketing. The markets are pricing in the disruption of global energy flows before a blockade even materializes.
It is a masterclass in asymmetric warfare. You have actors utilizing highly agile, relatively cheap drone technology to threaten billion-dollar naval assets and massive commercial shipping lanes.
Wild to think about.
Militarily, assets are staged. Financially, risk is repriced. The danger of this pressure without release environment is that the margin for error shrinks to zero. When systems operate at maximum tension, a single miscalculated drone strike shifts the equilibrium instantly.
And we see this exact same asymmetric breaking of legacy systems domestically right at the U.S. border.
Yes, we do.
It is completely morphed from a standard policy debate into a state of total logistical and infrastructure overload. Federal processing systems, local municipalities, downstream border facilities, they are all operating vastly beyond their design capacity.
And the source highlights a really critical evolution here. Cartels are no longer just smuggling narcotics in the shadows. They are functioning as highly sophisticated logistics networks.
Which means what, practically?
They are monetizing human flow on an industrial scale. They utilize social media and encrypted communications to route mass migration, intentionally overwhelming specific municipal checkpoints to create gaps in enforcement.
Wow.
By controlling these corridors, they are effectively acting as parallel authorities in certain regions.
Okay, wait. I have to play devil's advocate here for a second.
Go for it.
On a map, the Strait of Hormuz and the U.S. border are thousands of miles apart. They deal with completely different geopolitical actors.
Right.
How is a shipping lane in the Middle East experiencing the same systemic phenomenon as a municipal shelter system in Texas?
It's a great question. It's because both the global energy supply chain and municipal migration systems are legacy structures. They were built on an assumption of predictable linear flow.
Okay.
When you introduce asymmetric actors like rebel groups using cheap tech to halt international cargo ships, or cartels leveraging mass human migration as a tactical distraction, the fundamental math of the legacy system breaks. It costs too much to defend against cheap, agile disruptions. The systems lose equilibrium because they were never engineered to absorb the specific type of multi-layered hybrid pressure. Traditional rules of engagement simply no longer apply.
That makes total sense. So whether it's a shipping lane or a local shelter, the infrastructure simply cannot process the asymmetric volume being forced through it. The global bridge is shaking.
Exactly. Which brings us to the final and perhaps most vital system being overloaded right now.
The human system.
The human toll is the ultimate metric of systemic compression.
It really is. The seventh major threat in our briefing brings all of these global macro issues crashing down to the micro personal level. It's the expansion of the global mental health crisis. We are seeing rising levels of anxiety, chronic burnout, and deep social disconnection, just normalizing across all demographics.
It's everywhere.
So what does this all mean? The best way I can describe it is to think of the human nervous system right now like a smartphone. And we have way too many heavy apps running in the background.
Well, that's a good analogy.
You have the geopolitical escalation app running, the inflation and grocery prices app running, the AI might take my job app running. Because all these massive systemic apps are running simultaneously, the battery of our collective nervous system is chronically overheating.
And the source explicitly labels this prolonged nervous system overload. The human body is simply not biologically designed to maintain a baseline of sustained high alert conditions.
No, it's not.
When we are chronically exposed to instability, it creates severe cognitive fatigue.
And it's not just the external events themselves, right? It's the way we consume them.
Exactly. Oh. The algorithm-driven information environment actively amplifies the confusion. We are bombarded by engineered outrage and continuous negative news cycles. And this intentionally erodes our shared understanding of what is actually true.
Because everyone has their own algorithm feeding them different realities.
Right. And when our baseline reality fragments, the psychological strain increases exponentially. It damages our collective decision-making, our empathy, and our resilience. This isn't just a medical issue anymore. Mental health is a civilizational pressure point.
I want to talk directly to you listening for a second. If you have been feeling an underlying sense of exhaustion lately, or maybe you have a shorter fuse with your family, or just a general mental fog that you can't shake, this source material validates exactly why. Maintaining your emotional regulation is no longer just some weekend wellness trend. It is a core requirement for functioning in this current phase of global compression. You are processing an unprecedented amount of systemic stress.
Which is exactly why we need to discuss how we adapt. The purpose of mapping out these converging crises is never to induce panic. It is to clearly recognize the phase of history we are in so that we can consciously navigate it.
That is the perfect pivot. It's time for the conscious wrap-up for the truth seekers. The overarching system is under immense pressure, and legacy structures are breaking down. But how do we navigate it without breaking down ourselves? Because the source actually provides a roadmap for moving from the chaotic matrix to a higher frequency of operation.
It does. The source outlines four specific pillars for rising above this noise and reclaiming your agency.
Okay, what's the first one?
The first pillar is letting go of fear. Fear is described as the master key of control within these failing systems. So releasing it is your first act of personal sovereignty.
Wow. Okay. And the second?
The second pillar is practicing forgiveness and emotional clearing.
Meaning intentionally letting go of past interpersonal baggage so you actually have the energetic bandwidth to deal with the present moment.
Precisely. You cannot process global compression if you are weighed down by personal resentment. You just won't have the energy.
That is so true.
The third pillar is utilizing transformational breathing and meditation to anchor yourself in conscious presence rather than reactive panic.
Getting back to the breath.
Always. And the fourth is living with the heart of a volunteer, leading your community with authenticity, service, and unconditional love.
Those four pillars, they really strip away the complexity and bring it right back to what we can actually control.
And this raises an important question, and the source material phrases it beautifully. It asks, you're either outside acting in the movie or going within to watch it consciously.
Acting in the movie or going within to watch it consciously. That brings us right back to where we started today. Remember that suspension bridge analogy?
The converging storm of stress tests.
Exactly. Here is a final thought for you to sit with this week. We've spent this entire deep dive looking at how massive global systems, finance, tech, geopolitics are currently compressing. And they are compressing so hard that all the hidden structural flaws, the actual realities of how the world works, are being forced to the surface.
They can't stay hidden under this much pressure.
Right. So if that systemic compression is forcing hidden truths out on a global scale, What personal internal truths are being forced to the surface for you right now under the pressures of your own life? What is the storm revealing about your own foundation? Sit with that. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive, and we wish you grounded awareness in the week ahead.